Welcome to the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series, where your host, Andy Jacob, interviews leading entrepreneurs, founders, and CEOs about their incredible companies and discusses their unique entrepreneurial journeys. If you're the CEO or founder of an exciting and exceptional company, the editorial team of .com Magazine welcomes you to pitch your business story to appear on this exciting interview series by reaching out to Mr. Jacob at .com Magazine at .commagazine.com. And without further ado, here is another amazing entrepreneurial story on the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series.
Hello, everybody. Andy Jacob here with the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series. I have a great show on leadership today. You know, we talk about it all the time on the show. Hopefully you watch the show, watch all the great entrepreneurs and founders and CEOs that we have on the show. One thing that comes very clear, one thing when we speak to all of these great entrepreneurs running these amazing companies is how important leadership is, both in the C-level executive suite, through the management team, all the way through the rest of the team. People need to be leaders. So we decided today, of course, to bring on really a worldwide leading expert in leadership on the show. His name is Mr. Stephen Davis, and he is the founder and managing director of Renaissance Solutions. And when we talk about leadership, he has a very unique approach. You're going to love this interview very much. We've already had a pre-call with him, and some of the things that he has to say and some of the information that he can impart to our audience is just remarkable. So we're so excited, Stephen, to have you on the show today. Welcome to the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series today.
Andy, thank you very much for having me. I was really looking forward to speaking with you. What a background you have there, sir.
That's awesome, Stephen. Of course, you've become known really as an expert's expert in leadership, a leader in leadership, I guess we can call it. So before we get started, we have so many questions and you have such a unique approach. Let's pull the lens back to 30,000 feet. Tell us about Renaissance Solutions, and then we're going to get into it.
Thanks for asking. We started the company back about 23 years ago, because my background has been in recruiting for Fortune 500 companies. And I was trying to recruit someone who worked for a global bank. She worked in HR and she was a coach. And the company was laying people off. Their jobs were being eliminated. And she asked if I could come down and speak to these 150 or 200 people about how to deal with recruiters. So I did, and I gave a presentation. And after it was over, she approached me and she said, "Steve, you would be a great leadership coach." And I said, "Are you crazy? I'm a recruiter." And she said, "Yes, but you have the communication. You understand how to get things done. Think about it." 3 months later, she introduced me to her manager, who had a huge office here on Park Avenue. Andy, I had a 3-minute interview with this gentleman. He offered me the job on the spot, gave me an office as a consultant, and I started coaching people who walked into my office with their heads down, telling me that their jobs were going to be eliminated and they couldn't go home and tell their spouse that they were losing their job because they had kids in college, they had mortgages, and this is what I was facing. And I realized at that point that leadership is emotional. Looking for a job is emotional. And back in recruiting, I always looked at it as helping people, yes, empowering people, yes, but also making money when they were hired. I didn't really realize the depth of the emotion when someone is let go. So I started the business, got that financial services company as a client. I'm still working with them today, coaching their technologists globally. And my business has scaled to the point where people hire me Singapore, India, London, South America, all over the US, and because they want leadership, they want to improve their mobility and their careers. And that's how we started the business.
That's awesome, Stephen. I love it. I love it. And of course, let's talk about emotion. Let's understand how emotion changes the dynamic in a leadership situation. You know, you talk about emotion, we talk about leadership. Sometimes when we talk about leadership, we don't really think about the emotional component. So let's help our viewers understand how to become a better leader by thinking and working on their emotional component of leadership.
So glad you're asking. I'm sure you know this in your background, in your career, and your skill sets. There's a difference between being a good manager and a strong leader. And as a coach, I've been hired by managers to improve their teamwork, the direct reports. And ultimately, there's a culture that is communicated by a manager to a team and to the manager's superiors. It's a matter of, do you tell someone what to do? Do you get on their butt to ask them if they've done it? Or do you empower people and help them to learn, to grow, and to be part of a unified team? That's the difference, and that's how I coach. And just to give you a quick example, a manager hired me. I never worked with her before. And I said, what's the issue? And she said, she was in New York because she had a direct report in Delaware. And she said, this man is talented. He's important to my team, but he has a temper problem. What am I going to, I was like, well, I never had that facing me before, ever. Got him on the phone. We scheduled 10 sessions. By the 10th session, he invited me to his house for Thanksgiving dinner.
I love it. I love it. Of course, so many companies improve their bottom line because when they think about how important it is to have great leaders, one thing that really sort of resonates for a lot of companies is, what part of their leadership team do they really have to work on? Do they work on the leaders at the highest level? Do they work on the managers first? Which level do they work on that it makes the most powerful impact in their company? Is it the leadership team, the C-level suite executives, or the managers, or is it both?
That's an excellent question, Andy. The leadership from the managers and from the teams has a trickle up and a trickle down effect. And one of my favorite expressions, and this is how I coach, no matter whom I'm coaching, having a goal without having a plan is just a dream. It's important to establish the goal from a senior corporate management level and have buy-in from the line manager and the team, because it's supposed to be all one company. Even if there's 100,000, 200,000 employees, there's an old expression in recruiting. People don't leave their jobs, they leave their managers.
Yeah, I love that, Stephen. That makes all the sense in the world. And of course, we know that bringing a new employee in, bringing a new C-level executive in, bringing a new manager in costs a lot of money. There's an expense there. And that expense can be extraordinary, especially if there's a high turnover rate. So let's talk about how do we as entrepreneurs make sure that people stay in our organization so they don't keep moving on, costing us a lot of money in the recruitment process of new managers and C-level executives.
You know, that's an interesting point, Andy. I was once on a Zoom conference call with one of my corporate clients. We had about 25 senior leaders on the call, and we were doing a catch-up over a major event that was running, and I was a coach for it. One of the managers came right out and said, losing people is part of business. And no one said a word. So many people believe that And I've done a little research. There is a very credible organization in human resources. It's called the SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management. They reported an average cost to replace an employee, 6 to 9 months. And if someone's earning $60,000 a year, it's going to cost between $30,000 and $45,000 to recruit and train and retain a new employee. Multiply that, please.
Wow. It's such a great point you make, because people think about it. You're running your business. You're all about the bottom line. You're all about profitability. And you have money flying out the door on constant recruiting because your management team doesn't really understand how important it is to retain the team. And that's where you come in and you really help. And so when I look at what you do, I mean, you're really impacting the bottom line. What does the first conversation sound like, Stephen, when someone reaches out to you? They say, hey, Stephen, we saw you on the talk circuit, we saw you on the dais of a big event, or, you know, we've heard about your background. We know you're in New York. We've heard about your experience. What does that first conversation sound like with a company that says, hey, Stephen, we need some help?
The first conversation always starts with, where are you today? Where do you want to be tomorrow?
I like that. I like that.
Because, Andy, there's no one size fits all. Because, you know, every company is different. Every manager is different. Every person has a different personality and a work ethic. And people get so caught up in their own timelines and their own career goals. And there's something going on today. It's a new thought process. I should say relatively new. You know, intelligence is not new. What's relatively new is something called emotional intelligence. And my first conversation is designed to do a deep dive into the emotional intelligence of these decision makers.
I love it. Let's unpack that a little bit. Emotional intelligence. Some people call it emotional IQ.
Yep.
There are some tests online, of course, that people could take. But when we think about it, you know, let's break that down, because that's such an important aspect of what you do, Stephen. What really does emotional intelligence mean to you in terms of how it needs to be thought of from a management perspective?
Well, I'm happy to answer that. I'd also like to share what needs to happen from an employee perspective who's reporting to management. Emotional intelligence, or as I call it, EQ, the first two pillars are self-awareness and awareness of others. So when I'm talking with someone on that first call and I ask, what are your expectations for tomorrow? I understand how they think, what their emotions are, and how in tune they are with their team, not just themselves and their own goals, but what are their team goals. And when I coach people, I do a lot of internal mobility coaching, Andy, where someone hires me and says, you know, I've been a VP for 3 years. I want to be a managing director or an executive director or a director. How do I get there? And my first question is, what are you doing now to get there? And you know what so many people say? I ask my manager, what do I have to do? No,
that's
emotional intelligence, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And of course, what goes along with this emotional intelligence is empathy. And I know that you understand empathy very well as a real critical skill for leaders. Let's talk about that, because that's an interesting aspect that you have.
Thank you. Empathy is sometimes a very deep emotion hidden behind the corporate pressures of performance. And that is such a great question, Andy. I'm not sure how I can explain it, but the best way, I think, is there are certain managers that have minimal empathy because they're dominated by their deadlines and their own performance.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
there's something in emotional intelligence that requires sensitivity. And if someone doesn't have sensitivity, it's hard to find that empathy, that empathetic approach to someone. And what's very common today, and I'm sure you've heard this, virtual signaling. It's everywhere. Well, Steve, you know, Caroline worked until 9:30 last night. I saw that you logged off at 6. Virtue signaling. Caroline's better than Steve. Some managers manage that way. And the people that listen to that are affected emotionally. So to your point, it's critical to have some sort of empathy in a manager's approach, because this is not black and white. People are not one way or another way. Everyone's different. Everyone has different buttons that they can be pushed to do things.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because empathy has always been a critical skill for leadership. And it seems like it's taking on a new level of meaning, priority, importance right now. When we think about it, and I'm very curious, because I'm an old guy. I mean, I'm, you know, everybody knows that watches the show. I'm older than dirt under the ground right now. But I just always sort of think about, is it different now, Stephen, with sort of the younger people in the workplace? And do you see a difference between how managers have to deal with like super young people, you know, people in their 20s versus, you know, people in their 40s and 50s, or is it all the same?
Wow. It's certainly not all the same. You know, different generations have different attitudes, different personalities, different expectations. And you've got the Gen X, the Gen Y, the Gen Z. You've got the millennials who are turning into senior citizens very soon. So it's all different. But what I've learned really is that ageism is a reality, Andy. If someone is up for a job and the hiring manager is in their 30s or their 40s and they're interviewing someone in their 60s, could be an issue. Could be. I'm not saying it would be. It could be.
Yeah. And if I'm a 60-year-old man or woman that goes into an interview with a 30-year-old person that's going to be either the hiring manager or my manager, do I have to put on a different cap? Do I need to change who I am to sort of relate to that person on their level? Or do I just go in and be myself and let the cards fly where they fly?
Well, you don't want to be yourself and just let the cards fly where they fly. A lot of the work that I do is in career coaching. And the number one service people hire me for on the job search side is interview coaching. And if, to your point, if someone has a disparity in their age compared to the interviewer, I always say that interviewing or going into your manager for a performance review is not about you. It's not about the candidate. It's not about the member of the team. It's not about them. What does the decision maker want to hear? It's important. It's critical to start with what they want to hear. And then you can be honest and truthful and tell them what they want to hear based on your understanding of who they are. If it's a job interview, what's written in the job, or if it's a performance review where you can receive a promotion, you know the manager, you know the personality, you know the thought process. Give them what they want, but be true to who you are.
Wow. For the people watching the show that are maybe coming up on an interview or some type of performance review, rewind what Stephen just said. That's remarkable advice. You know, coaching.
Yes.
There's so many studies out there that ask CEOs and founders and very successful people about their view on coaching. And it's just remarkable how many of them say, hey, I love coaching. I've received coaching. I need coaching. I want coaching and I want it for my team. When we think about it, though, a question that might come up is people that want coaching, they get the coaching. They reach out to a great coach, a leader in the space, for example, like what you're doing, Stephen. Kind of a funny question, maybe a little sidewinder. Do they listen to the coaching?
Great question. I would say that they listen, but there's a difference between hearing and listening.
Yeah, right. That's interesting, right? Let's unpack that a little bit. Let's unpack how you get them to listen, hear it, and take action on it.
That's such a great point. I do a deep dive, try to understand what has been happening in the past that has brought the person to a coach. Then I do some gap analysis. What's missing? You've tried it your way. Let's try it this way. And I'm not even saying it's my way, because my opinions are only my opinions, Andy. There are great coaches out there on the corporate side and in agencies like mine, some great, talented, super talented people. But because it's an important opportunity, we only have one chance to make a first impression. So I can do my best practices and share best practices. If someone understands it, I want to understand if they've done it. And in many cases, I would say 80 to 85% of the people that I coach do it. 15 to 20% do it in their own way.
I love it. It's great. And that's a great percentage, of course. But one thing you just said, you know, that's awesome is, you only get one chance to make a first impression. And that's awesome and powerful. But let's talk about a manager that maybe their first impression wasn't that good with their team. And then they bring you in, you work with them. They not only listen, but you hear. And now they're saying to themselves, wow, I kind of get it much better than I did prior to, you know, spending time with Steven. Can they go back in and sort of re-change the mindset of the team after they've gone through your coaching to let the team know that there's sort of a new mindset here from management versus the old mindset that maybe wasn't working as well?
Yes, they can. However, Andy, management needs to acknowledge the change and accept the change and not just give it lip service.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So how does that happen? Do they talk to their team and say, hey, listen, in the past, maybe we've done things certain ways. I've done things certain ways. And I want you to know that, you know, life and employment and being a part of this team is about constantly and never ending improving. And we've decided to make some giant improvements. And let me tell you about the improvements. Not only am I asking you about the improvements, but I'm committed to make the same improvements myself. Is that sort of the way in which you have to divulge the new sort of management style? How does that work?
That's very close. When I kick off a corporate leadership project, I always begin with a document that management signs off on. I call it a manager's expectation form. So I go over 10 roughly areas that the manager wants to see improvements from the team. And before I go to the team, the manager signs off on it. And then when the coaching is completed, we go back and we do the metrics analysis to see that we're successful or not.
I like it. It's sort of what I would call in the old days a buy-in.
You got it. It is a buy-in.
Yeah, I like that, Stephen. Interesting. Let's talk about corporate culture. What if the culture's wrong? I mean, do you walk into some companies and you just say to yourself, wow, we really need to work with the management team and the staff, but this culture doesn't seem or feel right. How do you coach to improve a culture that you see from a third party's standpoint isn't the most effective culture in a company?
I'm so glad you asked that question. We call that toxic. And I have two options. Number one, identify the toxicity of a culture to management, and their reaction will speak volumes about the potential of fixing it. If I don't get that feeling that it's possible to be fixed, thank you, adios amigo.
Wow, interesting. So what you're saying, I think, is if you go in and you talk to the management team, and they're maybe hiding it under the mat, or they don't realize it, or maybe they do realize it, but they don't want to admit it, or they have too big of an ego to say, yeah, we've got some toxic things going on here. That's a recipe for disaster, because it's almost like they'll never learn, they'll never listen, and they'll never hear you. Is that sort of what we're thinking here?
Yes. And I usually ask one question. If I suspect that there's toxic cultures, my question is, how would you describe your leadership style? The answer is very telling. And when I speak to the direct reports who report into the manager, how would you describe your manager's leadership style? And if they don't sync up, I'm going to sync.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Interesting. And then, of course, after you go through this process, Stephen, and this is fascinating, there's data that can be used to determine whether this leadership expertise that you brought to the table is actually working. And I'm sure companies love to see those metrics to make sure that this is working, correct?
Correct.
How does it work?
It all goes back to the manager's expectation form. It's a check, check, check.
Wow. You simplified it.
It is simplified. And you started off by asking me, you know, about communication. Perception is reality. Andy, think about it. A manager could have a perception of an employee on manager's team, and that's reality to the manager. It may not be the employee's reality of that person. And every single person who has a manager has the ability to form the manager's impression of themselves based on how they communicate electronically in emails, how they communicate on one-on-one meetings, how they communicate on text messaging, on IM, in group meetings. It's all making that first impression. Every time you connect with someone, it's one shot to have a great impression.
Yeah, I like that. You keep going back to that, and that makes sense. We have managers watching the show. What advice, simple advice, maybe the top one key piece of advice that you can share with managers watching the show that can help them become better managers?
That's a loaded question. The short answer, make a list of direct reports into the manager, just their name, first name only. And under each person's name, write down an improvement you would like to see in the next 6 months. One improvement in the next 6 months.
Wow. And that's from the people on their team, correct?
Correct.
And you give them 6 months. So 6 months is a good time frame to look at it.
I believe so, because it's going to be integrated within the normal business operations, the day-to-day deadlines, meetings, everything else. So I was going to say 3 months, but I think 6 months is more lenient. It's more valuable, I think.
Interesting. And for the people watching the show that have managers, when you're talking to people that have managers, yes, what's the thing that they say that they wish that their managers would do or knew, or how they treated them?
What's the thing they would say that, could you rephrase that? Sorry.
Yeah. Let me ask it simpler.
Okay.
I got tongue tied there. I have a manager.
Yes.
You talk to people that have managers.
Yes, sir.
They say to you, Stephen, I wish my manager would blank. What's the thing that people who have managers wish their management team would do to make their experience as an employee better?
Okay, thank you for explaining that. I think the number one issue that employees wish that their managers would do better is to have more empathy. It's your word.
Yeah, it is. It's so interesting that you say that, you know, because we all need some empathy. And back in the old days, that was something that a lot of managers didn't have. It was more of a direct sort of employee-employer relationship where empathy was not even part of the picture. Has this increased in the past 10, 20, 30 years based on your experience?
I'm not sure I would say it's increased, Andy. I would say that it's become more visible.
Okay.
There are still managers who lead by do what I'm telling you to do, as opposed to, do you have any issues implementing what I'm asking you to do? Just as you know, that's a huge difference in those questions, right?
God, I love that. That's fantastic. I mean, that should be the name of your TED talk right there. That's almost an entire semester at Harvard Business School, what you just said in that one sentence. And so many people don't understand that. And I'm going to have to rewind the interview myself because that's awesome, Stephen. And of course, one thing that you've become known for is coaching people on the job hunt. And people that are searching for jobs, I mean, they're searching and searching, but if they had somebody like you to coach them, their search would be over because they'd be landing the job. So let's talk about that part of your business as well.
Thanks for asking, Andy. You know, coaching is a relatively new career in industry. And I don't know about you, but I'm a sports fanatic. I love sports. Thank you. Football, baseball, soccer, basketball. Do they have coaches? Yes. By the way, if someone is signed to a professional contract out of high school, they're immediately assigned a coach. So you think about the dichotomy here. Someone gets hired by IBM or Google or Microsoft, and it's their first job out of school. You're going into it blind. It's like, okay, coach, put me in. Well, they're in. You're getting a paycheck. They're working for a great company. They need longevity. So they a lot of them will hire me to coach them in a few areas. Number one, receiving promotions. Number two, people that are currently working. So many people don't like their jobs these days. So many people. And they stay stuck because they're either afraid or they're worried, or both. So what I do, and one thing about my coaching, Andy, is I don't want to work with people for a long time. My approach is to empower people because I believe that knowledge is power. And I try to share as much as I know about the hiring side. So if someone hires me, I'm not happy in my job, I want to get a promotion in the company, or I want to leave, what should I do? Goes back to the goal without a plan is just the dream. And I'm very methodical that way. And people are successful because they remove the emotion, or they at least minimize the emotion in looking for a job.
I love it. And of course, there's an old story. Goes back many, many, many years. I mean, my grandfather and great-grandfather and even great-great-grandfather, which is going in and talking to the boss, quote unquote, the boss, and asking for and asking for a raise. So do you coach people in that regard as well?
Absolutely. Because the raise goes hand in hand with the promotion.
And let's talk about it before I let you go.
Sure.
When we think about it, is it a presentation to the manager? How do you go in? I mean, how do you coach someone to go in and present their, I guess, their case, like almost like an attorney, that I'm worth it. I follow the corporate culture and here's what I expect and here's what I think I deserve. Maybe they don't say it in those words, but how do you coach them to do that?
It's another, I don't know where you get these great questions. It's a simple answer. It's number one, I've been on your team for X amount of time, and you want to get, to use your words, buy-in from the manager that you're performing up to their standards or you're exceeding expectations. And if the person is meeting or exceeding expectations, and it's time for a performance review, which most companies have either every 6 months or every year, salary comes up. Oh, Steve, you know, you did great this last year. You know, we're going to give you a 10% increase. Not good. You know, thank you for, you know, giving me a 10% increase. I just want to share something with you. I'm looking at other team members in this company and in the market in general with my years of experience, and their salaries are 25% higher. So it's not about the salary. What's more important to me is fulfilling your expectations, Mr. or Ms. Manager. I'm just looking for fair market value.
I like it.
On my skills, my achievements, and my education. Can we do something here?
I love that so much. Let's talk about entrepreneurship. Let's give back to the entrepreneurs watching this show. Sometimes they're having a tough time in business. We all do. I mean, when you're pushing hard, as you know, Stephen, it's not always perfect.
True.
Yet entrepreneurs wish that it was, but it never is. And they scrape their knees and they fall on their behind. For the younger entrepreneurs watching the show, Stephen, based on your experience, maybe you could give some pointers about what it takes to keep on pushing through the tough times and keep on going.
Oh, so I'm so glad you're asking me that question. And this is, I think, Andy, appropriate, not just for young entrepreneurs, but for professionals in a career currently. Who we are, and I'd love your opinion about this, who we are depends upon how we react to things that happen to us in life. And I've gone through the pain in my own life, and I've learned that sometimes in order to be successful, it's important to go back a step or two steps. And it's the people that are afraid to go back two steps, they stay stuck where they are and they don't learn. So if an entrepreneur is trying to get a business off the ground and they're not making any headway, you always have options. There's always choices. And what makes us stronger is learning. And again, recovering and not taking things so personally to become dejected and disappointed. And look at it from a purely factual perspective, Andy. This, again, is emotion. If we can remove the emotion and look at it from metrics, I've done A, B, C, D. I have a business model. I want to get it off the ground. This is not happening. Okay, step away from it. Ask someone who's successful. They've probably gone the same, if not worse, objections and failures and disappointments than you.
Yeah, it's a good point.
And does that make sense? I mean,
yeah. Who we are really depends on how we react, which is what you said.
Right.
And I agree. I can look back in my career and look at the way in which I reacted during some situations. And now that I'm older and hopefully a little bit more wiser with a few more, you know, experiences under my belt, I look back and I say to myself, wow, you know, I could have reacted differently. I could have changed things. But as you know, the difference between those successful entrepreneurs and the ones who are the ones that learn as they go. So they don't make the same mistake continually. They maybe make the mistake once, maybe twice at the outside, but then they learn how to react differently and better from their mistakes. So I love what you're saying. That should be the title of a book right there. I mean, this is fantastic. Stephen, I loved having you on the show today. The time just flew by. I already know I'm going to bring you back on the show because I want to get more into the psychology of the management team, how you can help the leadership and management team with your coaching. But I think we have a great sort of background right now of what you're doing, of course, at Renaissance with this, what I'm going to call communication leadership. I mean, it's fantastic what you're doing. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. This has been amazing.
Andy, thank you for having me. It's a joy to talk with you, really.